Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Braskem's second quarter of 2018 earnings conference call. Today with us, we have Fernando Mussa, CEO, Pedro Freitas, CFO, and Pedro Teixeira, Corporate Finance and Investor Relations Director. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded, and all participants will be in listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After Braskem remarks are completed, there will be a question and answer section. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star zero to reach the operator. We have simultaneous webcasts that may be accessed through Braskem's IR website at www.braskem-ri.com.br and the MZiQ platform, where the slide presentation is available for download. Please feel free to flip through the slides during the conference call. There will be a replay facility for this call on the website. We remind you that questions which will be answered during the Q&A section may be posted in the Braskem website. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are being made under the Safe Harbor of Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on beliefs and assumptions of Braskem management and on information currently available to the company. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Braskem and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Now, I will turn the conference over to Pedro Teixeira, Corporate Finance and Investor Relations Director. Mr. Teixeira, you may begin your conference.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining Braskem earnings conference call. We'll talk today about the results of the second quarter 2018. Let's begin our presentation turning to slide number three. In this slide, we provide some highlights about demand and international spread. On the demand side, let's talk about the demand impact in Brazil and the U.S. In Brazil, the demand fell by 4% this quarter as compared to the first quarter 2018 as a consequence of the drivers strike in Brazil. However, if we consider the accumulated demand in the first semester of 2018 and we compare with the accumulated demand in the first semester of 2017, there was an increase by 4%. There was a fall in this quarter. However, on accumulated base, we have an increase by 4%. In U.S., the demand rose by 7%. The economy in U.S. is growing very well. The expected growth rate for the year is around 3%. There are some good results on the segments of caps, cups, and nonwoven. Let's move to talk about international spread. International spread in Brazil for PET, this is international spread for the product that we sell in Brazil. For PP, there was a drop by 11%. This was expected, and this is a consequence of the ramp-up of the new PE capacity that is ramping up in the U.S. Spreads for vinyls remained quite stable, and the same for chemicals. In the U.S., the spreads were up by 8%. The demand on the PP side is quite strong, and also there is a ramp-up of the propylene new propylene capacity in the U.S., generating more propylene available in the market. The spread went up by 8%. In Europe, where the company has a total capacity of 0.5 million tons of polypropylene. The spread fell by 18%. There was an increase in propylene price, and there was a weaker demand for the PP in the region. In Mexico, the spread fell by 5%, higher same price and lower P prices. And this was expected with the ramp up of the new capacity in the U.S., both putting some pressure on the ethane price and also putting some pressure down on the PE price. So let's move to slide number 4, where we provide some highlights about utilization rates, sales, and EBITDA per region. So in Brazil, utilization rates remain very, very stable as compared to the second quarter. We consider this as a very good achievement, especially considering the driver truck strike. We have to remember that in the first quarter of 2018, the utilization rate was impacted by the blackout that we had in the northeast of Brazil and some stoppage for maintenance that we had in the cracker in the south of Brazil. In this quarter, the utilization rate was very much impacted by the driving truck strike. However, the utilization rate remained stable as compared with the first quarter of 2018. Sales fell by the same reason. Sales fell by 7% this quarter. The team here in Brasfin did as much as possible to keep our cracker operating. However, we were not able to move all the products that were produced this period, so the sales went down and the levels of inventory during this quarter went up. However, such levels should return to more reasonable, regular levels in the following quarters. The EBITDA generated by the Brazilian operations of Braskem were 10% higher than the EBITDA generated in the fourth quarter. So the spreads were relatively good, and also there was an impact of the depreciation of the Brazilian currency, which helped to dilute fixed costs in reais. In the U.S., the utilization rate fell by 13%. We had some non-recurring events. There was a stoppage for maintenance in one of our facilities in the U.S. that took a bit longer than expected, and some other operational issues in other PP facilities. So that's why the utilization rate in the U.S. fell by 13%. As a consequence of that, sales in the U.S. fell by 4%. However, due to very good spread that we are facing, especially in the U.S., the EBITDA in the U.S. and the region, U.S. and Europe regions, remain relatively stable. Talking about Mexico, utilization rate dropped by 13%. There was lower supply of ethane, but also we had a scheduled shutdown to improve the performance of certain equipment. So that these were the two reasons why the utilization rate in Mexico fell by 13%. As a consequence of that, sales in Mexico dropped by 8%. However, the EBITDA in Mexico remained relatively stable, just minus 2% accounted to $161 million dollars in this quarter. So let's move to slide number 5. Just to highlight here that overall the EBITDA of Brasfin in this second quarter of 2018 was 7% higher in when measured in U.S. dollar. When measured in reais, it was 20% higher when compared with the first quarter of 2018. Net profit of Brasfin was affected. Was down by 48% as compared to the first quarter of 2018. It was positive by 547 million reais. However, it was affected by the depreciation of the Brazilian currency. This generated a higher financial expenses compared to the first quarter. However, it is important to remember that we have the majority of our debt is in the long term, so this is not a cash effect. Moving to slide number six, and here we talk about the petrochemical outlook for the year of 2018. We expect lower PE spreads for the remainder of the year due to the ramp up of the new capacity in the U.S. and higher oil prices. And this is pretty much what we've been talking in every in our conference calls. For PP, although there are some new capacities in China, the demand is expected to grow more, and the spread should remain quite healthy. And for vinyls, PVC and caustic soda prices are forecast to increase this year versus 2017. Due to some recent capacity closures, especially in Asia, and as a consequence of environmental concerns. For PP spreads in the U.S. and Europe, the spreads for 2018 should be higher spreads due to tight PP market, especially in the U.S. The demand is very close in the U.S., so the spread should be very healthy. And the additional, in addition to new propylene capacity being ramped up in the region. And in Europe, the spreads are expected to decrease slightly. In Mexico, lower spreads are expected in this quarter as a result of the new capacities of polyethylene that are ramping up in the U.S. So, moving to this last slide here, we provide, we talk about the outlook for 2018. We make a comparison about what was our, what is our current estimate for 2018 and how these differ from the, from our previous estimate for 2018. So, utilization rate for 2018 versus 2017 is lower. And now we are less optimistic about that, especially because of the truck strike, the driver truck strike, and the unexpected issues that we faced in the U.S. During this quarter. So the utilization rate for the year should be lower than we were expecting last quarter. The same effect for demand, even though the demand should be better as compared to 2017. It should not be as better as we were expecting, mainly because of truck driver strike. For spreads of chemicals, we are more positive about that. We are seeing more higher butadiene prices. For PNPP, they are relatively stable. And for PVC, they are higher than 2017, but a bit smaller than we thought it would be. We have some decrease in the soda, caustic soda prices. There was one impact is the reintegra. End of May, the tax incentive on Brazilian exports under the reintegra tax regime was reduced from 2% to 0.1%. And in the same period, the special regime for chemical industry, REIC, was revoked by a provisional presidential decree, which will become effective in September 1st, 2018. So if the decree is passed into law, PIS/COFINS on feedstock purchases in Brazil will revert to the general rule. So EBITDA for the year of 2018 should be lower than what we posted in 2017, so we remain this our expectation for the year. However, working capital, actually free cash flow for the year of 2018 should be higher. So we had some negative impacts of working capital last year. We should not see the same impacts for, we are not expected to see the same impacts for this year. We should have lower interest rates for this year, lower payments of tax, especially because of the U.S. tax reform, CapEx should be a bit higher, and overall the free cash flow of the company should be high, though a lower EBITDA. So let's move to the Q&A session. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone at this time or any time. If at any point your question is answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the hashtag key. Questions will be taken in the order they are received. We do ask that when you pose your question, that you pick up your handset to provide optimal sound quality. Please hold while we poll for the questions. Mr. Gustavo Alevato from Santander would like to make a question.
Hi, guys. I have a few questions here on my side. First one regarding the domestic production in Brazil. So is the company prepared to export the production from Brazil since the outlook for the domestic market it's not as good as the company initially expected? The second question is regarding the utilization at Rio Pão. If you could provide some color, what was in the second quarter and what's the outlook for the rest of the year? And third and last question is regarding the operational issue at Marcos Hook site. Is it bad or we should estimate a lower utilization rate for U.S. operations in the second half due to this issue? Thank you.
Hello, Gustavo. This is Fernando Musa. Good afternoon to all. Gustavo, thanks for your question. As far as the domestic production in Brazil versus the sales profile and exports, as Pedro mentioned in the presentation, the truck driver impacted our production, had an indirect effect on sales in the first quarter because many of the value chains we serve had suffered even higher impact than we did from truck driver strike. So as we progress during the year, we will probably revert to a more sustainable growth from different value chains. We started the year with an expectation of a demand growth in Brazil for resins anywhere between 4 and 5%. Right now, we're more in the 2 to 4% range. A lot will depend on how the different value chains behave in this August-September timeframe. We did see good recovery in the back end of June when everybody came back. July, also several value chains had good production and good sales. So we'll need to see how this plays out. We tend to fluctuate more when we have operational challenges from a production point of view. We tend to fluctuate more on the export, which is natural. So the reduction in export, both in Brazil and Mexico, is a consequence of that. So we'll use the export as a buffer, especially the marginal exports are the buffer for that instability in operations when it happens. So as we recover production and we expect healthy back-end up-year demand, we should see higher sales in Brazil, but also with improved production, eventually higher export volume coming out of Brazil. As far as the Rio Pão utilization rate is concerned, the second quarter was a very positive second quarter. We actually ran above 100%, 304% utilization rate in a combination of higher supplies from Petrobras and small volume of imports by ourselves. And for the back end of the year, we continue with the expectation to have good supplies from Petrobras with the occasional import of ethane complementing. So we do expect to run the plant pretty hard for the back end. And as far as Marcos Hook is concerned, it was a mechanical issue at one of the compressors that has been solved. Plant is back. So we do expect that the second half of the year will go back to the typical utilization rates that we see in the U.S. that are much higher than what we saw in the second quarter.
Okay, thank you, very clear. Just one follow-up. During the negotiations among the controlling shareholders, does this affect the company's capital allocation for the second half? I mean, more related to payment of dividends, or is totally independent?
The negotiation between LyondellBasell and Odebrecht does not impact our day-to-day and our strategic drivers. It is a shareholder decision that could lead to a transaction between the two of them. As far as the plan that we are pursuing, we continue to pursue and deliver on our strategy. There is no dialogue as of now as far as dividends are concerned, especially since we paid dividends 2.5 months ago. So our normal payment would be sometime in the first quarter, beginning of second quarter next year. We just issued a board policy on dividends that explains how we think and run the process of analysis for dividends, which is a forward-looking current year plus 2 years of the business plan, expected investment, expected volatility of the industry. And with all that, we will consider dividends with an expectation of hitting a net debt over EBITDA below 2.5 times. 2.5 is a ceiling. It's not a target. We're not increasing that to get to 2.5. It's the threshold we look at where the plan, the expected investment, and expected potential volatility would keep the debt over the profile. So if and when it makes sense in the future, we'll go to the board and discuss dividends by the back end of the year, beginning of next year.
Thank you, guys.
Mr. Luiz Carvalho from UBS would like to make a question.
Hey, Monica, Pedro, thank you. I have a couple of questions here. The first one regarding the due diligence, the mover that is required for you to, I mean, you, the management, to perform in order to actually to comply with the deal. The question is, Beth Patel, CEO of LyondellBasell, was in Brazil, and he had a couple of meetings, including the to the Management and Energy Ministry. Is there any update regarding the conversations that potentially you had with him? And on top of that, is there any update regarding the tag along of Petrobras? Do you have any clarification if Odebrecht exercise or complete deal to the negotiation with LyondellBasell? If Petrobras remaining the controlling shareholders, that would trigger the tag-along right for the minorities. So that's the first one. The second one is regarding the NAFTA acquisition from Petrobras. We saw over the past couple, I mean, this quarter, that you reduced it, I don't mean significantly, but to a pretty much low level in terms of acquisition from Petrobras. I just would like to understand if this is something the new normal, or this is something momentary in order to be less dependent from the company. And third one, you already signed the maintenance agreement with the, some Brazilian entities. However, I would just like to follow up if there's something new. Over the past couple of weeks, we saw some news that potentially there was some additional value regarding the class action or the agreements that you'd be signing. So if there's some update regarding the potential additional cash that you would have to disperse, that would be great. Thank you.
Well, Luis, as far as the due diligence process is concerned, as informed to the market, the dialogue about the transaction happens at the shareholder level. We've been asked to support with information to support the dialogue. The process is going well. We provide some information and do expect additional questions from the shareholders so that they can have the dialogue with LyondellBasell. So there's not much more I can say about this as of today. As far as the tag-along options for Petrobras, I have no information. This is a question you should ask to the Petrobras management. We understand that there is a desire by Petrobras, expressed by several interviews by Ivan Monteiro, to assess whatever deal the Brush might agree upon with Leandro Barroso, and based on that assessment, make a decision on the right they have today under the shareholder agreement. So I have no other information beyond the fact that Petrobras does have the right for a tag-along that is clearly defined in the shareholder agreement. As for the minority shareholders, there is a provision in the bylaw that in any change of control, minorities will have a tag-along. So this provision will be triggered in the case there is a transaction between Petrobras, between Odebrecht and LyondellBasell that transfers the control of Braskem. This provision guarantees for the minority shareholders the same conditions that Petrobras would get, that Odebrecht would get in any transaction. As far as the NAFTA purchases that we do from Petrobras, this is a continuous process of managing the different suppliers and contracts that we have. As we discussed in previous calls, we have not only Petrobras as a supplier, but a relevant roster of other suppliers from different regions around the world. And this is managed on a month-by-month, week-by-week, and some cases day-by-day basis. There is no intent to be less dependent of Petrobras. This is a more operational and financial decision based on quality of the NAFTA. There are different types of NAFTA that yield different volumes of co-products. So we analyze the expectation of pricing for the different co-products and therefore select the slate of feedstock for the different crackers. But also, when different contracts have different pricing terms, conditions that we analyze when we're making the decisions. In the recent past, this has led to us buying less than the top volume that we could buy from Petrobras under the contract. But this has no intent to be less dependent. It's the consequence of operational and financial analysis. As far as any other amount related to class action or other potential agreements, we settled the class action agreement, and therefore we have no expectation of others. There is no other class action going on, so not sure where you got this as far as class action is concerned. As far as the authorities, we did communicate to the market that the dialogue with the AGU, CGU, which are part of the Brazilian authorities here, the dialogue with them about a potential agreement is underway. The company's expectation is that any agreement with AGU, CGU, from a financial point of view, would be covered with the agreement that we already signed with DOJ, the Swiss authorities, and the Ministério Público here in Brazil. So we do not have expectation as of today of any additional money with or without this agreement that is being discussed with AGU, CGU, and it's been discussed under confidentiality, and therefore I cannot enter into more details than what I just shared.
Thank you very much, Ms. Apriku. Thank you.
Mr. Hassan Ahmed from Alembic Global would like to make a question.
Hi, good afternoon, Fernando. You know, as I take a look, Fernando, at Q2, you know, particularly here in the U.S., you know, very interesting market dynamics, right? You had spot ethylene pricing cratering, seems to have recovered from there. Then you had ethane pricing skyrocketing, seems to have come down from there. And as I take a look at, you know, all of the expected capacity that was supposed to come online, and this is for the, you know, call it 2016 through 2019 time period, be it on the ethylene side, be it on the polyethylene side, it seems around 65% of that capacity has come online or hit the market. So my question is that these movements that we saw, were they sort of just like shock movements, and now there's a new equilibrium that's been established with the market having digested this capacity and only a one-third of incremental capacity left to hit the market? Because, again, through all of this noise, you know, on the spot market side, it seems that contract polyethylene pricing remained very resilient. So in a nutshell, the question I'm asking is the capacity or incremental supply-driven shock behind us, and should we expect more steady sort of ethylene, polyethylene pricing going forward over the next couple of quarters?
So, Hassan, that's a very interesting question. I would maybe, I don't have the data right in front of me here, but I would maybe disagree a little bit with your statement that both ethylene and PE already are at 65 hit the market and 35 not in the market yet. Our information and our reading of what's out there is that probably ethylene is closer to a higher number than that, and the PE is a little bit behind. Second, the ethylene seems to be running better than the new ethylene seems to be running better than the new polyethylene. So I think the C2 coming down is a consequence of the crackers coming up, running better than the P lines that are a little bit behind and are having more trouble. This led to the ethane going up. And now that, I mean, you start to, the PE starts to catch up and ethane production, the high oil price continues to increase. And ethane got a little pain by the availability of ethane, and demand continues to be very strong. So I think there's still some impact coming, but we're clearly getting to a new equilibrium. The expectation everyone had that it would be a big disturbance because everything would come online all together clearly is not the case and will not be the case. The projects have spread out over a 24-month period, and therefore the impact is less significant. And not forget the demand aspect, which has been very strong, surprisingly strong. The recycling availability in China that has been reduced because of the ban of import of waste has helped globally. And it came at a very positive time for the industry because it was just when the new peak capacity was ramping up. So I think we are reaching a new equilibrium. There's still some key capacity as the plants get stabilized and the new capacity that should be coming online enters the market. But the combination of spreading out all the projects and demand being very healthy makes it that even though we do expect a lower spread for the PE chain, it's still at a pretty healthy level. The contract price in the U.S., the exports will probably take all the volatility that comes from additional volume in the U.S. The market dynamics in the U.S. from a contract for local clients is a very different than the export dynamics. So I would expect more stability on the contract price domestically in the U.S. and any volatility with new plants coming online and new products hitting the market, coming on the export market. But again, with the healthy demand globally, it's going to be absorbed quickly and should lead to a pretty healthy, if you have an ethane cracker in the U.S. or Mexico, environment for the near future.
Very self-reminded, very self. Now, moving on again, you know, sticking to more of the macro side of things, just trying to get my head wrapped around the whole sort of, you know, trade war, tariffs, you know, questions surrounding, you know, what's going on between the U.S. and China, particularly on the polyethylene side. You know, two parts to this. One is, you know, as I take a look at the initial list that came out of products included in that to be tariffed list, it seems that, you know, LDPE, LLDPE were included, HDPE was not. So the first part of the question is, you know, how should we think about that? And the second part, again, part and parcel with this whole trade thing, is that, you know, I mean, now with Q2 earnings season behind us, you know, I spent time with, you know, more of the global PE guys, you know, the sort of U.S. guys that have global asset-based footprints. And they don't seem too worried about the trade tariffs, right, on the PE side. I mean, it just seems, you know, the recurring answer is, look, yes, we have assets here in the U.S., but we also have assets in Asia and in Europe, and we can easily redirect product, you know, which, let's say, was going out of the U.S., we can redirect it from, you know, other parts of Asia or Europe into the Chinese market. So they don't seem too worried about, you know, any negative impact from that. So, you know, would love to hear your views about, you know, be it the grade side of things of the PE as it affects trade, and then, you know, what some of these companies with a global footprint are saying.
So I think this is a very important topic. I tend to agree with the statement that when you think globally, trade flows will adjust. And there is production of PE, regardless if it's the same company or not, there's production in different regions. It's a product where trade flows should increase because of new capacity coming in regions where there is no demand, be it U.S. or Middle East. So we will have trade flows. So the industry will adjust. It might be just like any, from my point of view, this is, I look at this as a logistics constraint, right? Once you have a let's say, a railroad bridge falls, in the short term, it's painful, but when the flows will readjust and go around it, and eventually the bridge is fixed, right? It might be a little different.
I think that's a sensible way of thinking about it. You're right.
Yep. So, in the long term, and trade flows will adjust, with the blockage, which is the tariff, it might be a little more expensive to, the optimal flows with the tariffs might be different than without the tariffs. So there's a little bit more cost in the system, but compared to the volume and the margins that you make, I agree with the statement that this is a smaller impact. If you go company by company, region by region, it might be different. But in general, my perception, my belief is it will readjust. Having said that, it could be painful in the transition period as people redirect, mm-hmm. and until a new equilibrium of trade flows is established. But as you mentioned, most of the large players have plants everywhere, have commercial presence everywhere, so they have the channels, they will be able to adjust, we will be able to adjust, and different than the U.S.-based players, this might be an opportunity for us from a trade flow point of view, right? I mean, we're not suffering mm-hmm. the tariffs as the U.S. Mm-hmm. production. So this could be an opportunity for us to optimize, and the other players that face the tariffs might need to go out of their optimal flows, and we could improve our optimal flows depending on this. So we need to see how it plays out. On the HD versus low density and linear low, I saw an article this morning saying that China is planning
that. Now they're even including HD.
Yeah. Looks like HD, and they realized they left a loophole. So I saw the tagline. I didn't have time to read the detailed article, but my understanding of the tagline was HD was in. So eventually it will be fixed. I think the whole trade barrier, I mean, it's it's not in their U.S. or China interest to keep going and escalating. Eventually, it will reach an equilibrium, my personal belief. But with two very strong-willed leaders, it's hard to predict. So let's see where it goes.
No, perfect. Makes complete sense. Thanks so much, Fernando.
Remembering, if you have a question, please press star 1. As there are no questions, I would like to turn the floor over to the company for final considerations.
So I would like to thank you all for listening to our second quarter results call. This, as we expressed, was a challenging quarter in some external aspects, especially the truck driver strike in Brazil that created a lot of challenges from an operational point of view. But we got, despite this and some planned turnaround that we had, we managed to have very strong positive cash flow and EBITDA generation, which helped us reduce even more our leverage ratio. So our strategy of investing in productivity and competitiveness, diversification of feedstock, diversification from a geographical point of view, proved itself very valuable once more when we face different challenges in the different products in the different regions. And with all the challenges that we face, we continue to generate good results, leveraging the asset portfolio and the client relationships around the world to generate positive results. And we'll continue to pursue that strategy as it's been delivering a very satisfactory and good value creation results for our shareholders. So thank you all for listening, and I'll talk to you guys in 3 months' time when we disclose the third quarter results. Bye-bye.
Thank you. This concludes today's Braskem's earnings conference call. You may disconnect your lines at this time.